Chapter 8. She sat silent, nervously twisting her cigarette case between her fingers, while her visitor rehearsed the details of his conversation with Mr. Newell. He did not indeed tell her the arguments he had used to shake her husband's resolve, since in his eloquent sketch of Hermione's situation there had perforce entered hints unflattering to her mother. But he gave the impression that his ear had in the end been moved, and for that reason had consented to defer his refusal. "Ah, it's not that it's to prolong our misery," Mrs. Newell exclaimed. And after a moment she added drearily, "He has been waiting for such an opportunity for years." It seemed needless for Garnet to protract his visit, and he took leave with the promise to report at once the result of his final talk with Mr. Newell. But as he was passing through the antechamber, a side door opened and Hermione stood before him. Her face was flushed and shaken out of its usual repose of line, and he saw at once that he had been waiting for him. "Mr. Garnet," she said in a whisper. He paused, considering her with surprise. He had never supposed her capable of such emotion as her voice and eyes revealed. "I want to speak to you. We are quite safe here. Mama's with the dressmaker," she explained, closing the door behind her, while Garnet laid aside his hat and stick. "I am at your service," he said. "You have seen my father? Mama told me that you were to see him today," the girl went on, standing close to him in order that she might not have to raise her voice. "Yes, I have seen him," Garnet replied with increasing wonder. Hermione had never before mentioned her father to him, and it was by a slight stretch of veracity that he had included her name in her mother's plea to Mr. Newell. He had supposed her to be either unconscious of the transaction, or else too much engrossed in her own happiness to give it a thought, and he had forgiven her the last alternative in consideration of the abnormal character of her filial relations. But now he saw that he must readjust his view of her. "You went to ask him to come to my wedding, I know about it," Hermione continued. "Oh, of course it is the custom. People will think it odd if he does not come." She paused, and then asked, "Does he consent?" "No, he has not yet consented." "Ah, I thought so when I saw Mama just now. But he hasn't quite refused. He has promised to think it over." "But he hated it. He hated the idea?" Garnet hesitated. It seemed to arouse painful associations." "Ah, it would," she exclaimed. He was astonished at the passion of her accent, astonished still more at the tone with which she went on, laying her hand on his arm. "Mr. Garnet, he must not be asked. He has been asked too often to do things that he hated." Garnet looked at the girl with a shock of awe. What abysses of knowledge did her purity hide? "But, my dear Miss Hermione," he began. "I know what you are going to say," she interrupted him. "It is necessary that he should be present at the marriage, or the Dutryas will break it off. They don't want it very much, at any rate," she added with a strange candor, "and they will not be sorry, perhaps, for of course Louis would have to obey them." "So I explained to your father," Garnet assured her. "Yes, yes, I knew you would put it to him. But that makes no difference, Mr. Garnet. He must not be forced to come unwillingly." "But if he sees the point after all, no one can force him." "No, but if it is painful to him, if it reminds him too much." "Oh, Mr. Garnet, I was not a child when he left us. I was old enough to see. To see how it must hurt him even now to be reminded. Peace was all he asked for, and I want him to be left in peace." Garnet paused in deep embarrassment. "My dear child, there is no need to remind you that your own future," he had a gesture that recalled her mother. "My future must take care of itself. He must not be made to see us," she said imperatively. And as Garnet remained silent, she went on, "I have always hoped he did not hate me, but he would hate me now if he were forced to see me." "Not if he could see you at this moment," he exclaimed. She lifted her face with swimming eyes. "Well, go to him then. Tell him what I have said to you." Garnet continued to stand before her, deeply struck. It might be the best thing, he reflected inwardly, but he did not give utterance to the thought. He merely put out his hand, holding Hermione's in a long pressure. I will do whatever you wish, he replied. You understand that I am in earnest, she urged tenaciously. I am quite sure of it. Then I want you to repeat to him what I have said. I want him to be left undisturbed. I don't want him ever to hear of us again. The next day, at the appointed hour, Garnet resorted to the Luxembourg Gardens, which Mr. Newell had named as a meeting place in preference to his own lodgings. It was clear that he did not wish to admit the young man any further into his privacy than the occasion required, and the extreme shabbiness of his dress hinted that pride might be the cause of his reluctance. Garnet found him feeding the sparrows, but he desisted at the young man's approach, and said at once, "Colin, you will not thank me for bringing you all this distance. If that means that you are going to send me away with a refusal, I have come to spare you the necessity," Garnet answered. Mr. Newell turned on him a glance of undisguised wonder, in which an undertone of disappointment might almost have been detected. "Ah, they've got no use for me, after all," he said ironically. Garnet, in reply, related without comment his conversation with Hermione, and the message with which she had charged him. He remembered her words exactly, and repeated them without modification, heedless of what they implied or revealed. Mr. Newell listened with an immovable face, occasionally casting a crumb to his flock. When Garnet ended, he asked, "Colin, does her mother know of this?" "Assuredly not," cried Garnet with a movement of disgust. "You must pardon me, but Mrs. Newell is a very ingenious woman." Mr. Newell shook out his remaining crumbs and turned thoughtfully toward Garnet. "You believe it's quite clear to Hermione that these people will use my refusal as a pretext for backing out of the marriage?" "Perfectly clear, she told me so herself." "Doesn't she consider the young man rather chicken-hearted?" "No. He has already put up a big fight for her, and you know the French look at these things differently. He's only 23 and his marrying against his parents' approval is in itself an act of heroism." "Yes, I believe they look at it that way," Mr. Newell assented. He rose and picked up the half-smoked cigar which he had laid on the bench beside him. "What do they wear at these French weddings, anyhow?" "A dress suit, isn't it?" he asked. The question was such a surprise to Garnet that for the moment he could only stammer out, "Who consent then? I may go and tell her?" "You may tell my girl, yes." He gave a vague laugh and added, "Colin, one way or another, my wife always gets what she wants." "Why?" Mr. Newell's consent brought with it no accompanying concessions. In the first flush of his success, Garnet had pictured himself as bringing together the father and daughter, and hovering in an attitude of benediction over a family group in which Mrs. Newell did not very distinctly figure. But Mr. Newell's conditions were inflexible. He would see the thing through for his daughter's sake, but he stipulated that in the meantime there should be no meetings or farther communications of any kind. He agreed to be ready when Garnet called for him at the appointed hour on the wedding day, but until then he begged to be left alone. To this decision he adhered immovably, and when Garnet conveyed it to Hermione she accepted it with a deep look of understanding. As for Mrs. Newell, she was too much engrossed in the nuptial preparations to give her husband another thought. As he had gained her point, as he had disarmed her foes, and in the first flush of success as he had no time to remember by what means her victory had been won. Even Garnet's services received little recognition, unless he found them sufficiently compensated by the new look in Hermione's eyes. The principal figures in Mrs. Newell's foreground were the Woolsey Hubbards and Baron Schenkeldorf. With these she was in hourly consultation, and Mrs. Hubbard went about oriled with the importance of her close connection with an aristocratic marriage, and dazzled by the Baron's familiarity with the intricacies of the Almanach de Gotha. in his society and Mrs. Newell's. Mrs. Hubbard evidently felt that as he had penetrated to the sacred precincts, where the right thing flourished in its native soil. As for Hermione, her look of happiness had returned, but with an undertint of melancholy, visible perhaps only to Garnet, but to him always hauntingly present. Outwardly she sank back into her passive self, resigned to serve as the brilliant lay figure on which Mrs. Newell hung the trophies of conquest. Preparations for the wedding were zealously pressed. Mrs. Newell knew the danger of giving people time to think things over, and her fears about her husband being allayed, she began to 87, dread a new attempt at evasion on the part of the bridegroom's family. "The sooner it's over, the sounder I shall sleep," she declared to Garnet, and all the mitigations of art could not conceal the fact that she was desperately in need of that restorative. There were moments, indeed, when he was sorrier for her than for her husband or her daughter. So black and unfathomable appeared the abyss into which she must slip back if she lost her hold on this last spar of safety. But she did not lose her hold. His own experience, as well as her husband's declaration, might have told him that she always got what she wanted. How much as he had wanted this particular thing was shown by the way in which, on the last day, when all peril was over, she bloomed out in renovated splendor. It gave Garnet a shivering sense of the ugliness of the alternative which had confronted her. The day came. The showy coupe provided by Mrs. Newell presented itself punctually at Garnet's door, and the young man entered it and drove to the Rue Panonceau's. It was a little melancholy back street, with lean old houses sweating rust and damp, and glimpses of pit-life gardens, black and sunless, between walls bristling with iron spikes. On the narrow pavement a blind man pottered along led by a red-eyed poodle. A little farther on a disheveled woman sat grinding coffee on the threshold of a buvette. The bridal carriage stopped before one of the doorways, with a clatter of hoofs and harness which drew the neighborhood to its windows, and Garnet started to mount the ill-smelling stairs to the fourth floor, on which he learned from the concierge that Mr. Newell lodged. But halfway up he met the ladder descending, and they turned and went down together. Hermione's parent wore his usual imperturbable look, and his eye seemed as full as ever of generalizations on human folly, but there was something oddly shrunken and submerged in his appearance, as though he had grown smaller, or his clothes larger. And on the last hypothesis Garnet paused for it became evident to him that Mr. Newell had hired his dress suit. Seated at the young man's side on the satin cushions, he remained silent while the carriage rolled smoothly and rapidly through the network of streets leading to the Boulevard Saint-Germain. Only once he remarked, glancing at the elaborate fittings of the coupe, "Is this Mrs. Newell's carriage?" "I believe so, yes," Garnet assented, with the guilty sense that in defining that lady's possessions it was impossible not to trespass on those of her friends. Mr. Newell made no farther comment, but presently requested his companion to rehearse to him once more the exact duties which were to devolve on him during the coming ceremony. Having mastered these, he remained silent, fixing a dry speculative eye on the panorama of the brilliant streets, till the carriage drew up at the entrance of St. Philippe du Roule. With the same air of composure he followed his guide through the mob of spectators, and up the crimson velvet steps, at the head of which, but for a word from Garnet, a formidable Seuss, glittering with cocked hat and mace, would have checked the advance of the small crumpled figure so oddly out of keeping with the magnificence of the bridal party. The French fashion prescribing that the family cortege shall follow the bride to the altar, the vestibule of the church, was thronged with the participator in the coming procession. But if Mr. Newell felt any nervousness at his sudden projection into this unfamiliar group, nothing in his look or manner betrayed it. He stood beside Garnet till a white-favored carriage, dashing up to the church with a superlative glitter of highly groomed horseflesh and silver-plated harness, deposited the snowy apparition of the bride, supported by her mother. Then, as Hermione entered the vestibule, he went forward quietly to meet her. The girl, wrapped in the haze of her bridal veil, and a little Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.